was unable to study at any university here in the Western Cape, not one. And I was compelled to study in Durban, which was the ethnically correct university. But that in an event turned out to be a fortuitous event in my life, because studying in Durban in the early 70s introduced me to some of the leading intellectuals of the time, not simply Steve Biko, but also people like Rick Turner and many others. And that continues to play a role in my life. The people I've met, the people I've interacted with for the last few decades. But immediately after I left school, after I left college, when I came back to Cape Town, I was articled at one stage to Dalla Omar, who was the first South Africa's first Minister of Justice in a post-democracy. And in that role, I met thousands of people who played an important and significant role in the development of South Africa. And more than that, I mean, I defended hundreds and thousands of activists from 1976 onwards. From 1976 until my appointment as a judge, I almost on a continuous basis defended people who were the victims of apartheid. And then when the new South Africa dawned, I was appointed a judge. I've done my best to defend, protect, and advance democracy. What the job of the public protector, as we all know, entails is the defense of democracy in this country. Ultimately, if you look at the Act, and we all are familiar with the Act, the definition is a very wide one. It makes it possible to investigate any maladministration or prejudice in the public administration, sphere of public administration. Now, what I say is this, that my life experience as an attorney, as an advocate, as an activist, and my life experience as a judge makes me well disposed to being in a position to interpret the job of a public protector as it should be. The judgment of the Constitutional Court is a difficult one. It's a difficult one because it extends to a great extent the significance of the role of the public protector. One could very easily play down the role of a public protector into insignificance or elevate it as a pillar of democracy. Now, my life experience, my exposure to what the public protector should be and what democracy should be makes it important that I play a role in that. The public protector, let me just put it differently. The public protector is a unique institution. It's unique in the sense that it does not have any real comparison in the world. It doesn't have any real comparison because it's only three or four countries that have a public protector. They call it the Ombud. And in a sense, we're developing this institution here. But more than that, we're developing democracy as it should be developed and strengthening democracy. The Chapter 9 institutions are simply directed to strengthen democracy in all its manifestations. And that's what we hope to do. And that's, I think, my own life experience, and you can ask me about that, predisposes me to being a preeminently good candidate for the job. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Isai. Can I take the questions? I need to take the round of questions. Honorable Breitenbach, Horn, Van Dam, Kurenov, Swart, I'm hoping that you are getting my thing, Bonani, so that you can assist me.
Sorry, ma'am, I don't have to remember the names. I don't know.
Okay. They will. Please, if you can say who you are before you ask the question to the judge. Okay. Let me go again to the list. I said Honorable Bredenbrock, Honorable Horn, Honorable Van Damme, Honorable Kuranov, Honorable Swart, and Honorable Masondo. Can I stop there? I will give all of you an opportunity to ask questions. Honorable Mwabe, I do note you. You will have the opportunity in the next round. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Judge. My name is Glynis Bredenbrock. Indeed. In the questionnaire that you filled in for this application, questionnaire on page 5, I don't know if you have one with you.
I don't have it with me.
Page 5, question 2.1, please explain why you believe you are the right person to serve as the next public protector. In your answer, you made the following statement. The public protector has a very wide mandate and cannot possibly pursue all the complaints, especially in the current climate. An objective evaluation of each complaint, or as many as possible, is required on a day-to-day basis. Then on the next page, page 6, at the end of question 2, and question 2.2 refers to, in your opinion, the key challenges facing the country and the role the public protector should play. You say at the end of that answer, the other challenge facing the public protector is the multiplicity of complaints. The public protector must have a sharp eye to get rid of opportunistic complaints. Would you, combining those two statements of yours, please explain to me precisely what you mean by this? And then, just as an aside, you say you defended hundreds of thousands of activists?
Thousands.
Really? Hundreds of thousands?
No, not thousands, not hundreds.
Okay, thank you.
But I can say this, just on that question, that I defended more than most.
Okay. I also did not take it literally. Honorable Horn?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, afternoon, Judge.
Oh, good afternoon.
The Nkandla judgment indeed has brought clarity as to the binding nature of the powers of the public protector, and you yourself say that there's the possibility of either elevating the position to be a pillar of our democracy or downgrading it to a situation where it will not assist strengthening of democracy. The court itself found that what we look for in the public protector is a zero tolerance for impunity.
And so I didn't hear you, the zero tolerance for
impunity.
Yes, of course.
And simultaneously, the Act itself says that the office bearer of this important institutions should be fit and proper, and there's good case law which indicate that any indications of dishonesty must lead to a finding that a person is not fit and proper for such a position. Now I want to take you to what you yourself called in an interview the so-called Mumbai incident. And the fact is that whilst you were found not guilty, it bothers me.
I just put that on record immediately.
Judge, let him finish his question. Okay. I will give you an opportunity to respond.
Yes. You were found not guilty, and I think you also...
Object. That is not correct. I was never found guilty.
Judge,
that's not what I said.
I'm going to give you an opportunity to respond. Let the member finish his question. I know some of the questions can be very, quite emotional, but I would request Judge to just be to be a bit tolerant. Okay. Exercise your maximum tolerance, and can you proceed, Member?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, again, you were found not guilty. I know there's an indication that indeed the complainant or the accuser in the matter withdrew a charge or complaint, but in terms of the penal code applicable, it had to be effected through a court. But what I want your comment on is that it was fairly widely established or reported at the time that at first there was a point-blank denial of any sexual intercourse on your part, whilst later your defense turned around consensual sex. And I want to ask you how such a vastly different version of the facts of this event must not lead us to find that you were not at the time, at one of the two instances, completely honest. Then, Chair, just as a second question, Judge, you also indicated in an interview after you were nominated, and I will quote from that, and you said, my life has always been controversial. Everything I do is high profile. Will you not agree that what we are indeed in need of as South Africa now is for a public protector who will do his or her job without looking to be high profile? Thank you.
Honorable Van Damme, and you are going to be, let me rather limit this to only three of you. Ask your question, then I will give you an opportunity to respond, Judge, and I will proceed to other members. I just don't want to have too many questions piling up for you. I've just taken that decision because I think there are too many questions. Thank you. Over to you, Honorable Van Damme.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning, Judge Desai.
Morning.
You paying attention? So I'm sure you'll agree that in addition to having the requisite qualifications and the requisite experience to being public protector, the job also requires a number of personality attributes. It requires you to be able to handle stress. It requires you to be healthy. It requires you to have a cool head. Now, I think you have a number of health issues. Do you think those health issues will affect your ability to fulfill the task required as public protector? It's a 7-year term. Do you feel that your health issues may get in the way? And then would you regard yourself as a person with a cool head? And the reason I'm asking this question is because you've been in a number of public spats with your colleagues. You had a public spat with Judge Shoppe. You had a spat with Judge Bozalek. You had a spat with a fracas, by your own words, a fracas with an attorney in 1992. You had an angry confrontation with Judge Foxcroft. You were accused of defamation by Oasis Property. Considering all these public spats with your colleagues, would you regard yourself as a person with a cool head? I think being public protector and having to deal with a lot of attacks and personal attacks, you really have to have a cool head. So do you regard yourself as a person with a cool head?
Judge, I am giving you the opportunity to respond.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Let me first set out the Mumbai incident as it occurred. Firstly, I was never acquitted. I was not convicted either. What happened was that the allegation against me was withdrawn under oath. But in India, in terms of the Indian Penal Code, an offense such as that cannot be compounded. It means it cannot be withdrawn. But they do have a process by which you submit the state's case, and Ms. Breitenbach will understand that. You take the state's docket court, and you tell them, look here, is there a case for the accused to, without him having to say anything, where there is the case for him to answer. And it is on that basis that the case against me was dismissed. It's an absolute lie to suggest that I changed my version. The press engaged in a great deal of speculation with regard to that, but I never gave any version at all. I was acting at legal advice right from the beginning. And I never expressed or gave any view publicly publicly certainly. I never expressed any view as to what happened that night. Those of you familiar with Shantaram, the novel, would know that the police station where I was detained was the Kafri police station in Mumbai. And what happened was that the press were trying to buy a statement from the police station. And all sorts of events were occurring, and eventually a statement appeared. But let me say this very confidently. I never signed that statement. It was not my statement. That's the version you're relying upon for the contradiction. What happened was, you know, I've never been a popular judge with the white judges in the old order. And a judge by the name of, Monas Fleming, then came up with the story that I lied. That was a lie, because I never lied. I never changed my version. And then many of my comrades were very senior advocates came to my defense. But somehow the story has lingered on, as Monas Fleming said, and he found some reason to say that I was unfit to be a judge. But even he didn't pursue that. So any criticism of me or that Mumbai incident, if it's based on facts, I agree with you. But what you're saying is based on speculation and inferences from what appeared in the press. It's terrible for me having to repeat this, but this is what happened. And I say this with absolute confidence, that I did not contradict myself, that I've never given a version as to what happened, and the versions that are circulating around the statements which the police were selling on from the streets of police station. The other more important question is obviously this, the question that Ms. Breitenbach asked. It obviously, the Office of the Public Protector has a very wide mandate. It is the extremely wide mandate, I mean, because the Act itself says that any act any act which prejudices the state can be the subject of an inquiry. Now, you can't investigate every complaint. You can't decide whether every complaint is a complaint worthy of pursuing, worthy of spending state resources on investigating. I absolutely stand by what I said. There's somebody who will have to stand by and give, objectively decide which are the issues that we need emphasis upon. The issues that will arise from time to time. There could only have been one in Kandla. There are other issues. History will dictate the emergent situation that will arise in the years to come. It calls for an objective evaluation. That I agree. I didn't understand you to say you disagree with that. Yes, of course.
You may.
Oh yes, No. Well, the current climate tautologist, it's not really, but in the current situation, that one will have to exercise some discretion. And that makes the position of a public protector enormously powerful, because ultimately the public protector determines which issues warrant further investigation. Every single act that falls foul of the legislation would warrant investigation. But you can't do that. So in the current milieu, but what the position I really adopt is this, that the public protector must be independent from state authority. That the public protector must be independent, completely independent from the state. But to say that without coupling it to its logical next step is to lie, is to create a situation in which we don't recognize the reality for what it is. You don't only sing to the hymn sheet of the government, but you also don't sing to the hymn sheet of the opposition. You don't determine the agenda of the public protector is not determined by the hymn sheet of any party in this country, whether it be the government, whether it be the opposition, any other party. The independence in this country, an independence of the public protector means independence both from the state and from the ruling class in this country. You must remember that the largest attack against me was launched by the Business Day, Mr. Tim Cowan. A lot of it factually incorrect. But I think he senses that I won't sing to his hymn sheet either. That we will be as objective as we can in determining what is in the best interest of this country and the objective social conditions in this country. So please, put that very clearly. To the lady who asked the question about my short temper, I've had a colorful life, yes. The Oasis incident arose out of a community dispute we objected to them building a commercial enterprise in a living area. I'm sure you lived in that, my community would have supported me on that. The issue, I don't know about Judge Bozulik, I don't know where you picked that up from, is not true. Just check that I've never had a fight with my friend. Sorry? Yes. Sorry?
Can I request the members of the public to please switch off their mic and if they can also allow this interview process to go uninterrupted, please. Okay. You can switch off your mic, Judge, and you will switch it on when you are responding. Thank you. Over to you.
This was part of the research we conducted. Desai controversially came to defense of advocate Nahima Balan, who swore at Judge Bozulik, saying, I don't know if I should repeat that, your master, man, you, Desai stated, I can only imagine what precipitated Balam's reaction, which implies that Bozulik had instigated the reaction. So in essence, you said your fellow judge was deserving of that very colorful language.
I remember that incident, but it has nothing to do with Bozulik and me. Mr. Bellum was a pathetic individual. Actually, he committed suicide afterwards. He stood up in court one day and told Judge Bozulik, uses expletives. But I don't think I criticized Judge Bozulik. What we were discussing there was the conditions which led a man to react as he did as an advocate. And I don't think that's a significant incident in my life or Judge Bozulik's life.
All right.
And I don't think that was a significant incident. If you want to talk about that, we had a fight, but we didn't really have a fight. Judge Bozulik and I are the best of friends. But what happened was this. If you want to talk about the incident involving George Foxcroft, if you want to hear it, I will tell you. What happened was this. George Foxcroft sentenced one of the heroes of our struggle, Alan Busak. And when he sentenced him, we were in a tea room. And every single white judge who walked in said, well done, John. They were celebrating the demise of one of the revolutionary heroes of our time. And each time they said that to him, he muttered under his breath, I acted for Alan Busak in my younger days. And they told me, he kept on telling me, but your former client is a very arrogant man. And then he carried on, the next judge walks in, well done, John. And he says to me, your former client is a very arrogant man. So eventually I had enough of this. And I said to him, and became legendary in the legal world after that. What concerns me is not the arrogance of a former client. What concerns me is the arrogance of the white middle class. If you don't like that comment, it's yours. But what I did say, and you asked me to say it, you're restoring what you... Yes, but what you're doing...
Honorable member, can you please respond... And let's run this process properly. If you judge,
yeah, thank you.
Proceed.
If you see in Afrikaans you say krap. If you krap, then it comes out. And I think you've crapped there once too much. But yeah, because these are parts of our history that will remain to be accounted for in time to come. Sorry, you can next question, please.
Members, are you done, Judge?
Yes, I'm done.
And I'm not going to go back. I'm going to be giving other people an opportunity. Van Dam, are you done? There was an aspect of your question which I didn't hear, Judge, you're responding to, the one around your health. Your health.
I forgot that aspect.
I think it's the one that has not yet been answered. Okay. If you can respond to that, then we can move on.
Yeah, sorry about that. Very embarrassing to discuss my health in public. But you know, ideologically, I'm a socialist. So as a socialist, you're supposed to die with your boots on. But besides that, I did have, it's probably public knowledge, I had cancer 5-6 years ago. I had a form of leukemia called the CLL. I've completely recovered from that. I'm diabetic. And in the course of this year, I developed shingles. Shingles is a nerve ending. It leaves terrible marks on your body. It also itches, and it continues to itch to this day. But when I heard that this issue of my health is coming up here, I had a long discussion about that with my physician. My physician is one of the leading endocrinologists in the Cape, and I see him because of my diabetes. And he told me that at 65-year-old, I'm a 65-year-old. He can't predict what will happen to me unless something unforeseen occurs to my health. If nothing unforeseen occurs, then that's it. But if I develop some other form of illness that he can't predict, as he said, and I think we all know, that there but for fortune go you and I, whether I'm going to get another illness or not, it's an issue of good luck and good fortune. But other than that, Ms. Van Dam, I am in good health. Good health with all my limitations.
Thank you very much. Move on to other members. And Honorable Van Dam, I've given you an opportunity to ask questions. Would you allow all the other members to ask questions? Honorable Kuranoff, you were one of the people who was coming in. Kuranoff, Swart, and Masondo. Okay. I am going to take you, Honorable Shivambo and Honorable Ngwabe. Ngwabe was before you, Honorable Shivambo. So I am noting you. You will have your chance. Thank you. Honorable Kuranoff?
Oh.
Let me try this one. thank you, Chairperson, Judge Desai. You have attracted a lot of commentary, you know, in the media after you've been nominated. You know, maybe for good reasons, and some trying to indicate that you will not act independently, you know, when you are appointed. Now, you are an impeccable lawyer. There's no doubt about that. And if you are appointed, you know, you will become the public protector for the whole of South Africa. You've touched on the independence of that office. And I just want, again, to hear from your mouth, what do you understand about the independence of the public protector, and will you respect that at all time?
That was very good. That question was very short and crisp. Honorable Swart.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Judge. And it's good to see you again.
Giving me the new status of being a judge.
Chairperson and Judge. I've known you for many, many years, and it's good to see you here. Could I ask you about the independence as you see it, and you would recall the relationship with the previous, with the present public protector and Parliament? There was a lot of conflict for various reasons. We understand the independence you've elucidated, and you're going to again explain further in that regard. But how do you see the public protector liaising with Parliament, with the Justice Committee, because, of course, the budget comes from Parliament, and there is that link that is very key. And that leads me on to the second issue, which is we all know the Public Protector has severe financial constraints at the moment. How would you resolve that? Again, considering that following the Constitutional Court judgment, there are going to be a lot of review applications by government departments where those findings are now binding. How would you resolve the relationship with Parliament, firstly, and then the budgeting, the financial issues? Thank you, Chair.
That was nice and crisp as well, Honorable Swart. Honorable Masondo.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And of course, greeting to the judge. Three short questions, really. The first one is in relation to your knowledge and skill. What do you bring? And how will this help enhance the office of the Public Protector? Secondly, in relation to intergovernmental relations, what do you think the role of the Public Protector should be? This has really been raised in the context of many out there who believe that the relationship between the Public Protector and the other institutions of the state should not be antagonistic. If you agree to this view, what should the balance be? And thirdly,
sorry, could you repeat that?
What should the balance be in terms of relationship between the Public Protector's Office, or Office of Public Protector, and other institutions of government? The emphasis here is really that there is this thing called intergovernmental relations. Where does the Public Protector fit in the equation? Put in another way, intergovernmental relations has a very, very important role to play, and something that's reflected in the Constitution. How do we ensure that relations are at a level where one can talk of a balance in a credible manner? What's your view? That's your view, really, on this. The last part of the question is, there are many people who are concerned about the Public Protector not just protecting certain people, but protecting the people as a whole. Have you thought about this? And if so, what's your view?
Thank you, Honorable Masondo. Let me take you, Ngwabe and Shifambu. Then I'm going to let Judge to respond.
But Chair, those questions are too many. I don't think it's going to reply. Can you please answer? Oh, we'll come
shall
back
we? Later. Okay. Yeah. If that's your feeling, committee, can you respond to those questions, Judge?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me say, lawyers like to be flattered. And somebody calls you an incredible lawyer, you're flattered more than most. Thank you, Mr. Kuhner, for that comment. But I agree with you absolutely that the Office of the Public Protector must be important. But I say that further than that, that it should not only be independent from government, it should also be independent from other interest groups. That should actually operate on its own in the sense that it's accountable only to the Constitution and to South Africa. But there is no such thing as total independence, as we all politicians would certainly know, and that independence is often compromised by objective conditions. One can only hope that in the climate that prevails, and the climate, this is a difficult climate to be a public protector, that we'll be able to maintain not simply the independence of the office, but also maintain the ability to raise the stature of the organization. As Mr. Swartz correctly and I, the question answers yours as well. There is this intergovernmental relationship which will have to exist, certainly for purposes of funding and so on. But the offer, but as a lawyer, you'd know that this act is far too widely phrased. Every single offense would result in an investigation. You basically face thousands of investigations of any complaint that comes to you will amount to an offense, would amount to an investigation. The problem with that, though, is that, firstly, you won't have the resources. Secondly, who do you exclude and what do you exclude? And thirdly, how do you retain the efficacy of the organization, its credibility above all? It calls for a balancing act. What the forefathers, our fathers of our Constitution, when they created this wide institution, and now with the judgment of the Constitutional Court, it not only makes its powers wide, but also makes its power very powerful because its order is an order. It is the effect of an order of a court. So it's a very, the public protector becomes a very important institution, a very powerful institution. And Mr. Sondo, it certainly would call for cooperation between various arms of government. Cooperation between various arms of government is of utmost importance, not simply to see the functioning of the office, but to prevent the office becoming exercise in futility. We must be able to raise the stature of the organization. That's the real issue before us. How does one do that? On the one hand, pandering to government, which is to give you funding. Does one pander? And if not, what does one do? Quite clearly, one can't pander to government because that compromises your independence. On the other hand, most of us have a working relationship to get sufficient funding to keep it functioning adequately. Mr. Swart, I must say that I don't have a clear idea of where the funding comes, say that it comes from the state. The Department of Appropriations, yeah. So one will have to work that out. You know, I'm not a novice in funding. I mean, I've been on the board of the Foundation for Human Rights for 22 years, and we dealt with hundreds of millions of rand, Ms. Plattenbach. And we've dealt with that over 22 years successfully without any complaints. So I'm familiar with big concepts. But just to sell myself for 1 minute, I was chairperson of, and I'm a bit unsettled that Mr. Self is not here because he would know, he dealt with me over years. I was chairperson of the National Council for Correctional Services. And there we deal with large amounts of people. It's a body that deals with the release of lifers. And as a judge, I dealt with that as additional to my day-to-day work to see to the effect of running. We did that very successfully for 15 years, that we managed to run correctional services for so long as an added job to my job as a functioning judge. I'm very proud of that. I'm proud of the fact that I released lifers eventually after serving 20, 25 years in jail, and few of them, or not one of them that I know of, reoffended. So it was a hugely successful and difficult job that I've done. But understand money, Mr. Swartz, that I'm trying to say, and to some extent, not absolutely, I'm a socialist, so my knowledge of money may not be that good, but it's certainly good enough to manage an organization. I suppose one has staff to additionally help you. And one could do what one can under the circumstances, Madam Chair.
Judge, are you done with that response?
Unless I missed something out.
Okay. No, I don't see anything that is coming. Honorable Mwabe, then Honorable Shivambu, and Honorable Bongo. Okay, let's start again. Honorable Mwabe, Honorable Shivambu, Honorable Bongo, Honorable Msimang, then Honorable Mutapo. Then I'm going to come to you in the next round. We are going to run slightly late with this particular interview, but we will make sure that, you know, everybody has had their chance. Yes, Honorable Mwabi.
Oh, sorry.
It does, yeah, thank you. And can I ask the people who are observing the proceedings to please not touch this system because it does interfere with its efficiency. Thank you. Honorable Mwari?
Thank you, Chair. Greetings to Honorable Judge. I will take you to the same questionnaire. Honorable Judge, page 5, section 2.1. I think one of the members also quoted this section, where you were asked to explain why you believe you are the right person to serve as the next public protector. And towards the end of the first paragraph in your response, you said that Chapter 9 institutions are fundamental pillars of democratic state, and their interests are to be protected, advanced, and preserved. Now, I want to know from you, say you are appointed as the next public protector, what strategies will you use to make sure that the interests of this office are indeed protected, advanced, and preserved? Thank you.
Honorable Shivambu.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, Honorable Judge Desai, in the past year or two, Advocate Tulima Donsela was the public protector, would come to Parliament to report about the progress of the office and ask for additional funding and so on and so forth. And in many instances, and mostly because of the Secure in Comfort report, which dealt with the Nkandla question, she faced a lot of insults. She was called a CIA agent. She was called a DA member, a counter-revolutionary, all sorts of things that were labeled on her. I don't think you've got the temperament that is stable to could handle the pressure if you will get criticized later on, if you're ever appointed a public protector. Even now, you just illustrated, a member of parliament points to the rape allegation that happens on you and you interject him. I expected far much better from a judge that allow a person to speak whatever allegation they make, whatever form and content of allegation that they make, at least keep quiet and then you respond later. But you come here, a member of parliament speaks and then you interject them. Is that how we're going to work with you if you ever get appointed as a public protector? I think that is a worrying point. You have identified in the questionnaire the challenges which you think are facing South Africa. You say it's crime, it's poverty, it's skills, and then it's inflated civil service salaries. What should we do with the inflated civil service salaries? Should we have a In your questioning, it's a different one. Okay, that's fine. No, that's fine. That's fine. That's fine. Okay, that's fine. No, that's fine. That's fine. Then the other issue, the other question which we've been asking all the candidates that came here with struggle credentials and it's obviously your role. We appreciate your role in the fight against apartheid and everything else. But you keep on saying that you are socialist. What is this socialism that you're talking about? What is the socialist transformation of society that you're talking about that you aspire to have as a socialist? What exactly should we achieve? During the announcement of the results in the showgrounds in Pretoria and in Tshwane, there were a group of young ladies who were assaulted by the protection services of the presidency and of government for protesting against the rape or bringing awareness around rape. What is your opinion around those issues? And the second last question is on the fact that young women were assaulted by the protection services for raising awareness on the question of rape. The second last question is, do you think there was any wrongdoing on the part of the president in the construction of the private residence in Kandla? I'm sure you have read the Secure and Comfort report of the public protector. Do you think that there is anything wrong that the president of the ANC did that led to the construction of that particular house? The last question is the question that we have asked others as well about the enforcement of the Executive Members Ethics Act, because it outlines much more primarily the role of the public protector. How are you going to better that and make sure that it is implemented and enforced far much more appropriately, because it involves a president, it involves members of cabinet, including those that you must appropriate funds for the functioning of the public protector from their departments. Sure.
I think the questions that have come from the last two speakers are quite loaded, and I would give you an opportunity to respond. I will proceed to the next round after your response to you, Honorable Bongo, if you don't
Thank
mind.
Thank you, Madam
Honorable
Chair.
Judge.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The first question, which relates to the question of being in a position to defend and advance the pillars of democracy, I agree with you, I'll do the best I can. But to be able to defend those pillars, you must be able to recognize which are more significant, which needs emphasis from time to time. And I think that I'm well placed to do that and will do that the best I can. One can't give an assurance that will in fact happen, but what the assurance one can give is and will do the best one can to advance the all interests of the Chapter 9 institutions. The question of the... I'm not quite sure what Mr. Shivambu meant by the president's office and... were you talking of the Nkandla judgment? Yes. Oh, yes, of course. As a judge of the High Court and as the supremacy of the courts prevails, I accept absolutely the outcome of the Constitutional Court judgment. That judgment must... It's a correct exposition of our law. Is that what you want to hear? What do you want to hear?
Do you think there was any wrongdoing on the part of the president in all those... I'm saying that I assume that you have read the Secure and Comfort report of the public protector. Do you think that in all those happenings of Makanya and the Department of Public Works, do you think that there was any wrongdoing on the part of the president of the republic, or of the ANC, I mean to say?
I accept that there was. There's quite clearly wrongdoing on the face of that judgment. And I accept that there was wrongdoing on the part of national government, certainly. The question of socialism, Mr. Mkhando, I raise that because of my own past. I did not grow up in the ANC. I mean, that's, you may know that, you probably don't know that. If you're long enough in Cape Town, you know that many of us didn't grow up in the traditions of Oliver Tambo and so on. One is rooted in the history that goes far back, and it's a history of socialism. And I was schooled throughout my life in that way of thinking. I make no bones about it. I'm not afraid to say so. I'm actually proud of my past, the training I have in political thinking. That's why I may react strongly to people, which I shouldn't. I agree with you that I should not have reacted strongly to the gentleman who asked me. But you know, if you're facing this accusation day in, day out, and you know there's nothing you can really do about it, that you do react. And I, if you found that offensive, I agree with you. And if I must apologize to Mr. the gentleman in the blue suit, I would do that. But, Honorable Van Damme. Yeah. So I apologize for that. But you see, everybody is the product of his own life experiences. And in my case, I've lived intensely in the events that have occurred in South Africa and have been part of all these events for the last 5 decades. So I'm virtually alert to every nuance that occurs in the political life of this nation. I make mistakes, but I don't think my political thinking has been wrong in the vision that I've had for the future. I think we still need to work out how the country develops and how we find a solution that's acceptable to all South Africans. But that is something which will lie outside, not my field as if I'm a public protector, but in other fields of human endeavor and human thinking. But what I do say this, Mr. Shwambu, is this, that if you look at the world today and say that's it, then it's a world without hope. It's a world without vision for any revolutionary thought. So I believe in that we need to change. That's why I talk of a ruling class. I talk of a system where they try to dictate to you a hymn sheet to determine how particular people should react. Independence in South Africa means independence from all of those adverse influences that occur from time to time. And if one can't do that, then take a walk. Don't try to be public protector. Because the next public protector is not going to have an inkandla, which will define its role. The next public protector will have a sequence of events which may or may not make it a successful institution. And I said right at the beginning that we're working without precedence here. There are no other public protectors in the world. There are one or two ombudsmen in Norway and Sweden and New Zealand. But those three countries, the objective social conditions are different than what they are in this country. And in this country, the challenges are far more challenging than any of those countries. So the public protector in South Africa has a much more difficult role to fulfill because of the objective social conditions. Thank you, Madam Chair. Please tell me if I speak too much.
No problem, Judge. I will tell you. So far, it's going okay. Honorable Pongo. There's something wrong. I don't think it's the members of the public, but there's something wrong with our system. It just comes on its own. I've just been observing that. If you could advise the IT guys so that they can assist us with this challenge. Honorable Pongo.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, Judge Desai. Just first of all, I would like to appreciate the 40 years uninterrupted service in serving the judiciary of our country. And secondly, just to thank you for your honesty of disclosing the issue around Mumbai, because it was a matter that was almost all over the news after the nomination. My two issues will be, the first one is that There is an objection from AfriForum. I want you to comment on it. They are saying that you served as a legal advisor of Umkhonto weSizwe. So on those basis, they think that may impair your fitness and properness to hold this office. I wish you to comment on that one. And then secondly, when you were nominated for shortlisting, I think the DA has raised a matter about the judgments. I want you to just comment for the benefit of the public. But what are those judgments? Is there any such a thing? And if it's there, what kind of judgment did he refer to? And thank you, Chair.
Honorable Tseke? All right. Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Mine is somehow related. Mang, you will come after Honorable Matapo.
Yes.
Sorry.
Mine is somehow related to Honorable Bongo. Good afternoon, Judge. Muramadi Mutapo is my name. Judge Desai, there were objections on your nomination, especially in relation to impartiality. Some political parties raised that during 2001, there was a commission of inquiry which related to DA, New National Party, /ANC. There were findings against the DA. So the DA is doubting your impartiality. You know, one of the personal attributes which an ideal public protector should possess is impartiality amongst others. So may you kindly comment on that. Secondly, there was also an issue of delayed judgments, although none were reported to JSC or NEEC, National Enhancement Efficiency Committee. There were judgments which were said to have been delivered 9 months after being heard, 6 months. Can I refer to Victoria and Alfred Waterfront versus City of Cape Town judgment, which was delivered 6 months thereafter? HEG consulting judgment, TAC versus Rath over 9 months. I'm aware that the 2014 norms and standards for judicial officers came into effect in 2014, and these judgments were delivered prior to these norms and standards coming into effect. So, and I'm also aware that you were one of the panel of judges which were dealing with all these cases. So may you clear the air on the issue, taking into consideration that the Office of Public Protector has got a huge load of cases. So what is your take on that? And again, may you kindly comment on this garnishing order case, which brought joy to the most vulnerable. Thank you so much.
There are a lot of questions that Honorable Mutapo asked, but I wanted to give Honorable Msimang an opportunity to ask so that, Judge, you can respond to both the sets of questions. Yes, Honorable Msimang?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll only ask one question. My name, Judge, is Themba Msimang. Judge, you have emphasized the extremely wide powers that are conferred on the public protector. You have even pointed out that these are unprecedented in the world. And yet you have maintained that you are the best candidate for the post. which could be interpreted to be contradictory. But my question is, if you had your way, in what way would you trim down the powers of the public protector as they stand? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Is there any other member who had a question? Shivambui, I gave you the opportunity to ask the question.
Not Chair, I'm not going to ask any additional question.
Uh-huh, Shivambui.
I think the Honorable Judge had forgotten to answer the question about the IEC incident of the women who were protesting about the rape there. So I'm sure when he answers,
right,
he must cover that as
okay.
well. I'm sure.
Judge, you are requested to comment on that IEC rape matter. The member would like you to comment on it. Okay. Can I give you that opportunity? Probably before, maybe let me ask my own question, because for consistency, because I want to give you the last, you are going to respond to all the questions. Judge, one of the biggest threats that we have, not just in South Africa, but in the continent as a whole, is the threat of corruption in as far as it undermines the developmental agenda and developmental path of the continent. Now, Judge, obviously you will be, as a public protector, if you become successful, you will be required to, you will be required to take action or in actually mitigating against these cases. However, we have a challenge that you have your high-profile cases, but you have the cases that are cases from ordinary people, ordinary citizens. It could be about a house. It could be about property rates, especially with the local government environment, because we are beginning to see a lot of those cases in the local government environment. Now, Judge, how are you going to balance the cases, the high-profile cases, and those cases that are speaking directly to the people on the ground, your poor people? How are you going to balance that? The other thing, Judge, I also wanted you to know, are there any strategies that you will think you will come up with that will assist the state to recover monies that are accumulated wrongfully? Is it something that you are also considering? And you will have to forgive me, I don't belong to the justice cluster, I belong more to the finance cluster, and I tend to worry more about issues of fiscal prudence. I tend to worry more about issues of financial viability, and I also tend to worry more about how best do we save the purse, the national purse. Thank you, Judge. Oh, finally, that's the one, because I have to be consistent. Given the linguistic landscape in South Africa, we have a linguistic landscape in South Africa where you have your block, which is your Afrikaans English, which is your colonial descent kind of block, and you have your African origin block. Now, given the importance of this position to building social cohesion, how are you going to make sure that you are actually, your messages and your whatever actions that the public protector takes filters down to the ground and reaches to all the segments of society, not only one side of society? And probably it does speak to what you had said earlier on the independence of this office does not necessarily only refer to the state, but independence in its totality, including inferences of the ruling class and whatnot, and the most influential. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you very much to all the people who put questions. Let me start off with the first batch of questions. Put the objections from the AfriForum that somehow I've lost my objectivity because I acted for Umkhonto weSizwe. Let me tell AfriForum that I did not only act for Umkhonto weSizwe and the Matsunyana Commission, I acted also for Umbogodo. Umbogodo is a stone that crushes the internal security wing of Umkhonto weSizwe. Throughout my life, I've acted for the PAC, SASO, its predecessor forms. I acted for my own political organization, which I grew up in, the Unity Movement. And I've acted for the UDF in that period of my life. And then I acted for hundreds of many people who were involved in serious political acts in the state, against the state. I never acted for anybody who was part of the stooge system of that time, the pro-government elements. Nobody asked me to defend them, and I did not defend them. My entire life was spent defending them. If I've sinned by defending Umkhonto for weSizwe, I plead guilty to that sin. If I've sinned by acting for Umbogodo, I plead guilty. I defended those who were the victims of the system of apartheid, and I resented the fact that those who opposed us in the courtrooms and elsewhere were living on the fat of apartheid. So you must remember that in our background, in our mindset, we had two sets of people, us and them. And they were them, and we were us. So AfriForum can rest assured, not only did I defend the people, but I'm proud of the fact that I defended them. You asked me about the issue of judgments. The lady, Mrs. Matkata, asked me about the issue of the... I don't know where she picked up the judgment of the waterfront. That's a very significant judgment because that deals with, the waterfront doesn't have a zoning. It doesn't, municipal regulations, Mr. Swartz, you will know, don't apply to the waterfront. And that is because of that judgment I gave. It's a very complex judgment. It took 8 or 9 months to deliver. It's a full bench of three of us that wrote it. So any lawyer would know life has its complexities. Judgment hurried is often judgment, justice buried. So it's not a question of simply issuing judgment like you issue orders. Judgments sometimes take time. Sometimes judgments have to be evaluated properly before they're delivered, and the impact on the lives of many people. But what is important is this, that we do have a process. If anybody oversteps the mark now, we go to the Chief Justice, and then the Judicial Service Commission then take steps against you. That hasn't been done against me. So you can rest assured that's not a problem. But I want to emphasize that those who talk about judgments must also remember that if you present a complex case to a judge, you're going to take some time before you get the mature judgment. I never done tax in my life. In the university I went to, for some reason, never taught us tax. And one day they decided to give us a tax matter. And the Dutch president allocated the matter to me. It's one of the largest companies listed in the stock exchange. And the receiver was at the risk of losing R500 million. I sat with that judgment. I first read up every tax law I could. And I then produced the judgment on tax, which actually was against the state. It was in favor of one of the big boys in this country. And the state then took that to 10 to 6 of the most senior counsel in the country to see if they could take it on appeal. And they advised to rest it because there is nothing further that could be done about it. So the point I'm making is it's not simply justice, delivering justice as a judge, is not simply issuing judgments. It's issuing mature judgments when the situation warrants it. My greatest contribution as a judge, and it probably be written in my epitaph, was the garnishee order judgment. That comes once in a lifetime to a judge, a case which impacts on the lives of millions of people. And when I saw that judgment, I knew this was it. The day I issued the judgment, it immediately affected the lives of millions of people. Millions of people will be wrongly charged, wrongly, not charged in the criminal sense, but wrongly charged excessive fees and were wrongly made to pay off amounts which they weren't owing and so on. Fortunately, the case was backed by a woman of substance who then brought the matter to court. The matter stands. It's the Constitutional Court hasn't given judgment yet, but I can tell you there's no way they're going to interfere with that judgment. So, you know, there's certain things you're proud of. I'm proud of defending people in the apartheid era, but I'm proud that I was able to deliver a judgment which actually remedied an evil. The garnishing system as it prevailed was an evil. It's an evil in the sense that, you know what happened in that case? If you live in Stellenbosch, you were made to pay, you signed a consent to judgment in Pikketburg or somewhere else, thousands of miles away. And then they implemented that judgment there against you and then brought it back. It was clearly, I shouldn't say this, but it was clearly an act of, let me not use the criminal term, but it was clearly an act of total inhumanity that prevailed. That millions of rands being made in the backs of poor people. And surprisingly, in a democratic state, the state was not able to pick up that the system was evil, if not unjust. So,
Honorable Judge, I don't like doing this to you, but I would like you to try and be crisp with your responses, because I'm now having two other members who would like to ask something.
Just finish.
I have two more members that would like to ask something.
But just finish the question of...
The
gentleman over here asked that I can't really...
I'm saying to the judge, can he try to be very short in his responses? That's fine.
We
did the same thing with Judge Wena, and I think I wanted to make sure that we are consistent with what we do. May proceed.
Can I question the gentleman asked over there? One can't really trim down the office of the public protector. One doesn't really want to trim down the office of the public protector. But what one has to do is to find a way, modus vivendi, how it survives optimally while taking into account the realistic conditions. How does one do that? I mean, Madam Chair, you raised the issue that corruption is endemic, not only in this country, but throughout the current world. And one must be able to curb corruption if one's to have a developmental state. Corruption corrodes the developmental state. So I agree with you, absolutely, it's the biggest threat. But once one is aware of that, one is able to deal with that. So what you said, I actually agree with you. And I agree with you that one should be able to focus on that in working towards a solution. The public protector... It's a difficult office. It is going to be a difficult office, but I'm sure we can try to deal with it the best we can.
Thank you very much. I think I'm going to. I've allowed every man.
1, 2, 3. Yes, mic is open. Showcase. Say something, Lucayo.
Okay, this is Lucayo. I'm sitting in the Parliament studio. I'm testing with Johannesburg. I'm hoping that they can hear me. Can you guys hear me? This is Lucayo. This is Ilukan. You're sitting in the Parliament studio. I am testing. One, two, three, four, five. I can't hear anything because... Lucky, I can't hear anything. Jesus Christ. Please dial up. I'm hearing static. Look, I just hear static in my ear, and this thing is really starting to annoy me now. No, I'm here getting static. I'm getting static.
You're getting static.